A1.
Number 15A.
Now today we come to the fourth standpoint, namely to the science of Christian Science. You remember how we tried now from the standpoint of science, so to say, to look towards the four sides of the Holy City, and so we were considering the science of the Word of God, and then the science of the Christ, last time the science of Christianity. And now today I would like to investigate with you the science of Christian Science. I can only give you a survey of this enormous subject. When we come to this subject of the science of Christian Science, really then the whole view opens up so vast and wide that it will take quite a few more courses only really to be clear about the scientific aspect of Christian Science. You see, we call Christian Science, as the title indicates, a science. And really, the textbook that has 600 pages refers so often to science. Over 1,000 times the term science, capital S, is used, indicating that what Mrs. Eddy had in mind when she was writing the textbook, that she was writing a science, and not just a religion. The term religion only occurs a few times in the textbook, and most of the time in a negative or theological sense, and only very few references really combine religion to science. So that we must see that really what she presented was the science of all sciences, so to say, namely the science of medicine, of true medicine, namely the science of mind healing. She presented the science of ethics, the science of government, the science of true economy, the science of true relationship or sociology, the science naturally also of true religion. And so really we find in the textbook the science of all sciences. But just by stating in the title of the book that it is a science, science and health is key to the scripture, that it is a science, does not make it yet a science. Just by taking that term and using it doesn't make the subject yet scientific. So what I would like to do today is to investigate with you the scientific nature of Christian Science. And as I said, I can only hint to the problems that are concerned with it. Let us first ask ourselves, what is a science really? What do we mean by the term science? And I like to quote a definition from Funk and Wagnall's dictionary, which reads like this. First, it gives a definition of what science is not. I always like first to state what science is not, what something is not, because usually one has a wrong concept about anything. So this definition first gives an explication of what science is not. It says knowledge, and that is real, even in italics in the text, knowledge of a single fact not known to any other, or of many facts not known as having any mutual relations or as comprehended under any general law, does not reach the meaning of science. just as far as this for the moment. What is stated here is that a knowledge of single facts, of one fact or many facts, which have not been understood in their mutual relations, really have not the right to the term of being scientific facts or scientific truths. We know very well that we sometimes know quite a lot about a subject, whatever that subject is. But just knowing facts about any subject doesn't entitle us to say that we know that subject scientifically. What then is science? And so Funken-Wagnall says, science is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in system. We can see that really that which makes a knowledge, or the knowledge of single or more truth, a science, is that when these truths are understood in their relationship to each other, when they are classified into laws and embodied in systems. So only the relationship and the knowledge of these relationships of facts give us a sense that we think and study something scientifically. One of these well-known people in England who are on the Brain Trust, like Dr. Ronofsky, he said the same thing very easily. He said, science is not a fact-finding activity, but it is a fact-arranging activity. You see, most Christian scientists, and especially at the beginning, are devoted to find facts, and they are very happy of finding divine truths, in the plural. Here a wonderful statement, there a wonderful statement, here in the Bible and the textbook a wonderful sentence or verse, which are true in themselves, but knowing these truths, no matter how many they are only fact-finding activities, but not fact-arranging activities. And therefore these isolated truths are not understood in its scientific nature. And therefore we cannot yet say that we know Christian science. So a science really stands versus knowing a number of truths or learning statements by heart, like learning by heart, say, certain psalms, learning by heart, so many statements from Mrs. Eddy's writings. Learning by heart, such statements have a great value, I must say that, because in time of trouble, these statements may come back, and it's better that these truths come back to consciousness than any sort of erroneous thought. But we must be quite aware that this is not science yet, that science is a step much further than knowing isolated truth. Mrs. Eddy says, principle is not to be found in fragmentary ideas. See, knowing hundreds or thousands of fragmentary ideas, searching after thousands of fragmentary truths in the textbook, in the Bible, has not yet the nature of a science. Principle is not to be found in fragmentary ideas. What makes up a science is that all the ideas of principle are bound together into one coherent system. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy says, the divine science of man is woven into one web of consistency without seam or rent. See that the facts are woven, so to say, in one web of consistency, woven together so that every fact is held together with every other fact. And that, naturally, is only science. We know very well that we live in an age of science. What is this age of science? It's an age in which we begin to learn and to teach every subject in a scientific way. How then was it taught before the scientific age? Before the scientific age, we also had searches for truth in every field of activity. But the difference is in how a subject is being taught and presented. And so we can distinguish, so to say, the unscientific teaching of truth and the scientific method of truth. Let me just illustrate what I mean. You see, arithmetic could be taught in two ways. First, in an unscientific way, namely by teaching definite, certain facts or calculations in arithmetic. We could start to teach a child by saying, now look here, 2 and 2 are 4. And the child could memorize that. Then afterwards, I could perhaps teach him that 5 times 5 is 25. Afterwards, perhaps that 8 minus 3 is 5. You see, these are all truths in the realm of arithmetic. And I could teach the child these truths. How long could I go on doing that? Not very long, because the capacity of learning would soon come to an end after perhaps memorizing a few hundred of these arithmetical truths. We would reach a limit. But arithmetic has, so to say, infinite computation. And so with this way of memorizing truths, we could never really fathom arithmetic. We could really never embrace the whole of arithmetic. The other method which we use in the scientific age is to teach arithmetic through science, which means that it is that arithmetic is really reduced to law and embodied in system. And so the teacher teaches arithmetic first as in its system, teaching it first the order of the digits, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then when the child has learned this simple order, with which the child cannot yet practice anything, it's not yet of great use, then the teacher teaches him 4 ways of computing these numbers, these 10 digits, and shows the law of addition, the subtraction, multiplication, and division. And through these 4 simple processes, the child is able really to calculate already scientifically and can use the numeration table and in that way culture his arithmetic knowledge or consciousness, so that through this fundamental system he begins already to be able to calculate any calculation within the realm of simple arithmetic. You see that through a scientific method, really, the child is very quickly able to embrace the whole realm of simple arithmetic. This is really the greatness of a science. When one considers this by teaching only 10 digits and then 4 laws, that is so to say, by teaching 14 facts, 14 truths, so to say, but scientifically arranged truths, that with that simplicity the child can embrace nearly infinite calculations within the realm of arithmetic. Then we see the greatness of a science. The greatness, therefore, of a science is really that the infinite calculations, the infinite truths, can be reduced to a system. And by knowing that system, the learner is able to calculate all the numerous possibilities within that realm he has been taught through the system. So I always just stand in awe before the greatness of a science, whatever that science is, the meaning of a science. Isn't it really a great comforter, this science that tells us that the infinite can be really be grasped through simplicity. We are not concerned with arithmetic, as the illustration was, but we are concerned with the infinite being. Just as arithmetic has infinite calculations within its own realm, so we have a subject which is infinite. Being is infinite and is expressed infinitely. And as Mrs. Eddy says, we can never really fathom the infinite as an infinite. The infinite is, as she says, undefinable as a whole. We cannot define the infinite in its infinitude, or we would have to be bigger than the infinite. If we could embrace the infinite with its infinitude, then we would have to be bigger. She says, even eternity can never reveal the whole of God. Being is so unlimited, so infinitely unlimited, that nothing can embrace and contain this infinite. Therefore, we could ask ourselves the following question. If our subject is the infinite being, which expresses itself through infinite ideas, have we then any chance ever to know God? Have we then a chance to be able to embrace, comprehend this infinite being? Without science, we would have to say no. But with science it is different. Just as I have shown in the illustration of arithmetic, we could see that though there are infinite calculations, we can learn them through a system, through a simple system, so that we can get hold of any of the infinite calculations through our understanding of the system of arithmetic. And the same thing is true in being. We can therefore understand the infinite. If that infinite could also be reduced to a system, just as any other subject we learn today in school is reduced to a system. Now this is exactly what Mrs. Eddy had in mind when she wrote the textbook. She could see, as she stated, that the infinite is undefinable as a whole, that even eternity could not reveal the whole, but she was interested to know that God, so that whatever the situation may be, we can, so to say, divinely calculate the truth of being and not be at a loss. Therefore, And that is her contribution to the ages and her contribution as a step forward to the Bible, that she, in the scientific age, revealed the science and system of being. That she said this important statement that divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system. See, she shows that divine metaphysics, that which has to do with the infinite and the infinite ideas, with the realm of the infinite ideas, that is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. She says, this system enabled the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based. So, let us see that Christian Science is a system which represents divine metaphysics, reduced, in the sense that Mrs. Ellis said, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system. What means reduce? Reduce, according to Webster, means to bring into certain order or arrangement or classification, or also as it is used in arithmetic, to change the denomination of, say, a quantity without changing the value. That means to reduce. She said, or it says, to change the form of an expression without changing the value. So, when the infinite is reduced to a system, it means that the infinite as an expression is put into another form without losing its infinite value. We must never think of reduce as taking something away, that we make something which is big small. Reduce means that we take an expression, the form of an expression, like the term God or the term the infinite, and change that term into another term without changing the value. You know exactly how in arithmetic you do that. You have, for instance, the expression 4/20, a fraction called 4/20. Well, you can reduce it and say, I can also say it is 1/5. So 1/5 has quite different numbers in that expression than a 4/20, but the value is the same. It's exactly the same value. You change, really, the expression, make it simpler. We simplify it through reduction, but we never take away anything of the quantity or of the value. And the same thing is true with being. If Mrs. Eddy writes a textbook of only 600 pages about a subject which is infinite, and therefore a subject which could fill the whole earth, if she reduces it to 600 pages, she doesn't belittle deity, she doesn't make the infinite smaller or present only a part of it. No, she just uses the method of system through which she can, in a simple way, state all what the infinite really fundamentally contains. Just as in arithmetic, through the 10 digits and the 4 ways of calculation, we have the system of arithmetic, a simple statement which really contains within itself all the calculations within the realm of arithmetic. So, we can see that what arithmetic, as an illustration, shows that through 14 truths, so to say, or 14 scientific systematic facts, we can really fathom all the infinite calculations. So in metaphysics, Mrs. Eddy has reduced divine metaphysics to a system of the 7 and the 4. of the seven and the four. The seven, namely, the seven great synonymous term for God, the 7 days of creation as stated in the Bible, defining what God is. Then the four, defining through the word Christ, Christianity and science, how that seven operates in being. Just as the four calculation in arithmetic show how the ten operate in the realm of arithmetic. And so, just as arithmetic has a calculus, in the same way Mrs. Eddy speaks of the divine infinite calculus. And she does it, for instance, at the end of her exegesis of the 7 days of creation, when she has explained what God in his sevenfold nature is. At the end, she says, on page 520 of these 7 days of creation, she says, these days will appear as mortality disappears, and they will reveal eternity, newness of life, in which all sense of error forever disappears, and thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. See, she could see that through our understanding of the 7 days of creation and the way they operate in being, that thought, our thought, accepts a divine infinite calculus, accepts the way how these ideas operate in a divine system. And you know how this term system plays an important role in Mrs. Eddy's writings, that she discovered the system of Christian science. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, and so on. Now we know that system really is based on order and law and rules. That the system is a compound of law and order and rules. Therefore, we must see that the infinite God, expressing himself through the infinite ideas, can therefore be reduced not only to a system, but through what the system comprises, can reduce to laws, to orders, to rules. For instance, Mrs. Eddy would say in that wonderful chapter on science, theology and medicine, she says, from the infinite one in Christian science comes one principle and its infinite idea. You see again the subject of the infinite one with the infinite ideas. And with this infinitude come spiritual rules, laws and their demonstrations. You see, she could just see that we are living in the realm of the infinite with its infinite ideas. And her great question was, are these infinite ideas chaotic or ordered? Do they operate by chance or do they operate according to law? Are there rules with which we can demonstrate these orders and these laws? So, really, you can see that we come here to the pith of any understanding of God. Namely, that understanding must not be an understanding of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of facts, of divine facts, but that it is an understanding of what the system of divine science is. What are the laws? What are the orders and the rules? She quotes it, and it's a statement from Pope, says that order is heaven's first law. And the term order and divine order that comes down from heaven is a very important term which Mrs. Eddy uses through all her writings. that he could see that that divine being is ordered and not chaotic. And so, if it is ordered, we must ask ourselves, what is this order? It's not enough always to say that Christian Science is a science and not to know what that science is. It's not enough to say that Christian Science has order, that the infinite is ordered, and not knowing what that order is. We have seen that the keynote is understanding and not statement. It's not enough to state that the infinite is ordered. The keynote of Christian Science is understanding, therefore understanding what this order is. Now, the most fundamental order which we have is the order of the definition of God. See, just as in arithmetic we have a fundamental order, namely the order from 1 to 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The constructive, unfolding order. So, in Christian Science, we have discovered that the fundamental order of God is the definition of God. The definition of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And we must see that this is a definite order, and not just putting one synonym next to the other at random. It is not so that Mrs. Eddy could have put these seven synonymous terms in any order in the definition or in the question, what is God? You can see that already by comparing this question through all her editions, and you will find that from edition to edition she would change the order of the synonymous terms. And at one moment of her development, she would have the seven synonymous terms. But then she still would go on changing the order of the seven, until finally she had it in the way we have it today, namely mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. This is not a chance. It's a definite scientific order. But we have seen that the order, say in arithmetic, of 1 to 10 operates in four different ways of calculating: addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. And in the same way, we see that there is in being four ways of operating, namely the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And through our course we have realized that this is also a definite order, because we have seen that first, we always first have to know what is God. Only then, when we have known what is God, we really can unite with this God, and then that God becomes to us the Christ power, the Christ. And only then, when the Christ power lives within us, we can use those truths, the divine truth, Christianity. And then we have seen as a fourth point that then we have to use science, namely to understand these three operations of the Word, Christ, and Christianity as the only truth there is. So again, Word, Christ, Christianity, and science is a definite order. And so we already have two fundamental orders, namely those of the four and the seven. And if you take the definition of God in the Christian Science textbook, we find them again. Namely, the definition is, what is God? The answer is, God is incorporeal, the Word, divine, the Christ, supreme, Christianity, infinite, science. And then comes the seven, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So that in that definition, which up to now I didn't take in its fullness, but I refer to them up to now for convenience sake always only through the seven synonymous terms, In that definition you have the four and the seven, the 11, that great, wonderful symbol which in the Bible always symbolizes the unorganized sense of God, because science is unorganized.